Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by the California 1020, 10 miles, 20 bands, coming up on Sunday, February 15th at Del Mar Fairgrounds, Encinitas, and back, cal1020.com, by Core Sports, the very best in women's athletic wear, coresports.com. And you can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville Radio on iTunes. Our next guest, probably the greatest triathlon coach of all time. He's had success at the Olympics, at the Ironman, and simply has coached some of the greatest athletes in history. Mr. Brett Sutton joins us. Brett, how are you, sir?
Hi, Bob. I'm good, thanks very much. Thanks very much for having me on.
Oh, I love it. So you just finished a swim session already?
Yeah, we've got one out of the road already, and a little bit of controversy. We've got Nicholas Berry doing the Ironman here at Cozumel, so...
Wow. There's
plenty of sparks going around because she's one of those people that start to worry about things. And so, yeah, it was a fun morning.
So is she worried about stepping up in the distance as the Olympic gold medalist?
Well, no, she's apprehensive because she hasn't done the training.
Right.
So this year for her has been one of the mixed bag. What we tried to do with her is... you know, the first year after the Olympics, she got married and had a family.
Yep.
And, you know, she wasn't really considering a future long term at that particular stage. It was, she'd been to three Olympics, as you'd know.
Right.
And, you know, we'd already had a game plan in place for the 2 years before the Olympics that whatever happened, her career was going to finish with that Olympics. Of course, she never thought she would win. And so it was all, if you get to know Swiss Germans, that everything's in its place. And so the day after the race at the London, that was going to be the end of it. And so everything was put in place for the family and the things that, you know, we care about that we put on hold.
Sure.
So we decided after the Olympics, why should we change? And she's not one of these people that goes chasing the money. So she just told the sponsors and whatever, if they wanted to support it, she wasn't going to get on the Olympic gravy train. She was going to marry her love of her life and have a baby, and that's what we did. And then she came back at the end of the year and did a good race in Cozumel, so she likes Cozumel. She helps us with the foundation here. We've got 120 kids here that we work with on a daily basis. So she keeps coming back to Cozumel and helping us with the kids, and she did the World Cup here and did well. And so this year we decided in 2014 it was to do the things that she loves to do within sport. And if triathlon happened to fit in, that's fine. But triathlon was not the major goal. So the year went extremely well. And she qualified. She ran her first marathon. And the time was good enough to qualify for the European Run Championships. So then we concentrated on that. And... she won the Switzerland 5000 track championships, which is something she's always keen on. She likes running track. That's where she started, actually, as a junior. She was a runner.
Yeah.
And won the European triathlon championships, then went back to the marathon, did a half Ironman somewhere in Tenero and did a great job, and was a little bit overshadowed by Daniela because she raced the world championships on the same weekend. So. Yeah. Daniela won Mont Tremblant, and Nicola won a half, went back to running, and then come out and won the two World Cups, had a week rest where she thought that was the end of the season. She said, you know, we talked about after the Olympics about doing the Ironman, and we made approaches to WTC, and nothing came of it, so we forgot about it. And she said, well, we don't know what we're doing in 2015, so... do you think you can get me ready for the Ironman in Cozumel? And that was now, I think, five weeks ago. So she hasn't sat on the bike. She's a very good athlete. Nobody's going to tell you that she's not. She's a champion, and she rides fantastic. The problem is this season, and you can do it with the ITU races, we've hardly done any bike riding at all. And as she realizes now that you just can't fudge 180K.
No, that's a thing, yeah.
She spent the last 3 weeks doing stuff she's never done before. I think her longest bike rides within our training schedules is 3.5 hours. So, and that's long for her. So usually in her ITU preparation, she would go maybe, you know, 3 hours, 3 hours 15 on a long ride. So the last couple of weeks, she's gone up to four-hour rides, and obviously it's knocked her around. So she's in the same situation every Ironman does at this 10 days out. They're doubting whether they can do it, you know.
Right.
And so it's very nice to see, actually, because she's got the same symptoms as every Ironman age group that I've seen, you know. And while people are saying what time she's going to, we've never even thought of, she's never even thought about that. She hasn't even thought about being competitive. What she wants to do is race for the kids over here, so she'll be their representative in the race. She's got a race suit put together, so it's the same as the kids' stuff for our foundation. And, you know, she said, if I can complete, I'll be very happy, and that's what we're doing. So, yeah, the swim session today was a bit of apprehensive because she's heading out on a four-hour ride now, and she feels a bit tired. So,
what a surprise.
Unlike I to you,
yeah.
You can't say, I'll take it easy today, you just go 2 hours.
Yeah.
We just said, do the 4 hours, and that's tough.
So what's fascinating to me is when I look back at a Chrissy Wellington or a Daniela, it seems that you're able to recognize in those athletes that they have the ability to go long before they realize they have the ability to go long. Talk a little bit about that.
I think that would be a good – well, it's not an overnight thing,
right.
Bob, and that's what people don't realize. Like, I watched Daniela now because I've lived in Switzerland for 15 years. I thought if we talk about Daniela, because I thought she did an absolutely amazing job.
Yep, she did.
I think her performance was every bit as good as Chrissy's in her debut.
Yep.
And I'll say every bit as good as Carolyn Steffens, which I think has been totally overlooked. Her debut was absolutely fantastic.
Yep.
But, I think Carolyn's was just under Chrissy's. But I think Daniela's was the same or above, you know, just the circumstances. She made a couple little rookie mistakes, which we all do. But no, she had a fantastic race. Now, the thing was, I seen her in 208 do a magnificent race at the Olympics. She chased Nicola home. And the difference was, I thought, well, that's the best ever short course race you've ever done and ever will do. And the problem is that, you know, people are always striving to be better, better, better. And sometimes when you look for that extra 2% that's not there, you take a 10% deviant. And I think that was the problem. And then all of a sudden, you know, we call it in trisato.com looking for clues. So then all of a sudden she started going and looking for different things, that what's wrong. And there was nothing wrong. I just think she had, for her and her ability level, I think Darren Smith trained her fantastic, and I think she had a wonderful Olympics. Now, I can tell you, Nicola knows, we discussed it, you know, before the Olympics this time in London. I've always told Nicola, so she said, you know, the short course girls can go long, you know. You know the girls can go long. We can go long. And I said, you know what? I know three girls that could actually make the jump. And one was, of course, her, which she didn't want to hear.
Right.
And the other one was Lisa Norden, who ended up finishing second at the Olympics with her.
Yep.
And I said, if ever Daniela Ryf goes long, everybody should retire. And that's basically what I said to her in 2009.
Yeah.
So I've watched her all the time. Daniela wanted to train with me before the Olympics, and I'm sure she'd be the first to tell you that. But again, unless she was going to go long, I didn't want to train her. And because people say that I'm very much about the psychology of the sport. I just kept telling her, you're playing in the wrong background. I said, you want to train with me? We're going to go half Ironman. You know, we're going to go non-drafting races. We're going to go back and enjoy yourself. We're going to get off a diet. We're not going to diet to try to get lighter and lighter and lighter so you can be competitive with the short course girls. Because I said, you know, the short course doesn't suit your strengths. She's an absolute wonderful bike rider, as is Nicola. But a different bike rider. She's a power bike rider. And so when you say, how do you look at them? I look at her like Chrissy, and I looked at her very much like Carolyn Steffen. And I thought, you know, you're a power bike rider. And where Nicola's a technical bike rider, you know, very skillful, very cyclist, in and out of corners like a whippet. So they're different, but they're both terrific on a bike. And so that's why they can do these half Ironmans on very little preparation, because it suits their strengths, you know. And I just thought Daniela, when she came into the group, we had a lot of things we had to sort out with her. And we wanted to get her confidence back. I don't think I've said to anybody that, you know, I haven't made her a good athlete. Danielle is a great athlete. She just needed some direction. She needed a place where she felt comfortable, and she found it. And Nicola and Rito Hoog, who's Nicola's husband, actually put us together, because at that stage he was the high-performance manager of the ITU Racing in Switzerland, and we sat and we talked, and we basically said, okay, I'll train you, but we just can't do the ITU. We have to do the longer races. And she agreed, and that's how it all started. So, you know, they train well together. I don't put them together on the running if I can help it. I don't put them together on the biking. So they only see each other in the pool. So that's the dynamics.
So when Chrissy came to you, and she was thinking Olympics, yes. And at that point, she really hadn't had a heck of a lot of success at any of the distances. Yep. So sure. I remember reading, I think it might have been in her book, where she said that you knew that she had an eating disorder. Is it just something you could tell? Is it from all those years of coaching where you could tell when somebody's got an issue?
Yes. People don't realize I've been coaching as a professional coach for on and off for 40 years. So even though I look good, I'm very old at this sport. My father's a professional coach. My mother's a professional coach. My brother's been a three-time Olympic swim coach. So that's the background that people don't understand. That, you know, I've grown up with it from 6 o'clock. Six years up.
Yeah.
To 6 o'clock, I was on a pool deck.
Exactly.
And so, you know, you pick things up, and that's why I say it. And people tend to say that, you know, when I talk about the animal husbandry of training horses and dogs, and I say, you know, I learned more there than I ever did at a lecture at a triathlon, it's because you have to observe. You can't train an animal if you're not an observant person. So the people that are the best animal trainers tend to be the best observers. And I was lucky enough to be brought up in an environment where my dad was a very good coach. However, he couldn't read or write, so he never read a training manual in his life. But he kept, wherever he went, he kept producing great athletes. But he had great powers of observation, and he used to drill it into our boys. You know, my brother and my sister were the best learner swim coach in Australia, and everybody will tell you that. So, you know, the Sutton name is famous in swimming. It's got nothing to do with Brett Sutton and his triathlon gig. You know, we've been in swimming a long time, and basically you learn to observe. And, you know, you can see bone structures of people. You can see muscle wastage if you're looking for it. And so, you know, it was quite easy. And again, to tell you the truth, I watched Chrissy decimate the age group team, the age group world championships in Lausanne in 2006 or 2007, I forget which it is. And so I had Tim Don win the world championship there, and of course I stick around and watch to see where the next person's going to come from. I don't know what happened, but I actually seen somebody ripping past on a bike, and it was just caught my eye, and it was Chrissy Wellington. And then I watched the race. She won by about an hour and a half, and I thought, wow, look at that girl ride, you know. The good news at that point, Bob, was I was watching on a flat bit of ground in a straight line, and it looked fantastic. So, of course, I must be honest with you, it was pretty easy to work out she wasn't doing Olympic distance when I watched her do three or four rides with the girl. She just couldn't sit on a bike, and she had no skills going around corners or up and down hills.
Right.
And so there was no skill factor there, you know. It was someone that hadn't spent much time on any other bike, you know, riding a mountain bike in the Himalayas. But she had an enormous engine. And again, you know, she came over, and I think she said it in a book, she came over for a three-day trial, and a week trial, and we had our first argument after 2 days, I think, and, you know, she jumped out of the water and said, we're here, you're supposed to be doing this because I mightn't have been paying her enough attention. And I just said to her, I said, I don't have to look anymore, you can go home now if you like. I said, from the neck down, I said, you could be a professional athlete, and I said, you couldn't just be a professional athlete. I said, you could be great, but, you know, from the neck up, it's a mess. So go home and think about it. But, you know, and she did. She went home, and we give her a scholarship at 10CVB. She'd come in, and it was very much, I've got very little time. You've got very little. I need to do this. I'm only going to give you one season because I'm working on this project, and I work for the London Borough or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, she got the full force of the Brett Sutton quick step, and we jumped right on her, and we did things with her, which I don't do to the other kids, as far as trying to strengthen her mentally. And she trained with the boys. I made her live with the boys, which I know was a harrowing experience, and I told the boys to make it as hard as possible because it was my opinion that she was a little soft. And so they antagonized her for 6 months and made her a champion. And that's what happened with Chrissy. But, you know, you get in the car behind her and you just ride, and, you know, you just...
Yeah.
You'd have people wanting to buy tickets to go watch her train, you know.
I think Chrissy,
how good she was.
I think Chrissy said, she said, Brett told me, he said, yeah, from the neck down, you're great. I just have to cut off your head. Because, you know, you think too much, you talk too much. So when you're, as a coach, we see more of it when we talk about coaches and having to, you know, confront their athletes. We see more of that in the ball sports, you know, football, baseball, basketball, rugby, you know, where coaches play, you know, I don't know if you call them play games, but they know that each athlete's different in the way they motivate them. We don't see it as much, I don't think, in individual sports. And I think that's part of the reputation of Brett Sutton, is that you will get on people, and you seem to know which ones you can push and which ones you need to, you know, you pat on the back. How is that just from all the years of coaching?
It's experience.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. And it's difficult. And now when my results help me a lot. So a young, inexperienced coach is going to find it difficult to do that, because I can always look at my program and say, look, there's the results. Have a look at it.
Yeah.
And that gives me credit. You know what I mean? It gives me credibility with athletes to actually say, I'm going to be totally honest with you. I've got a new person that's starting here right now this week, you know, and I make it very hard to join our group. And so people build this great big thing up. But the fact of the matter is, if you want to be good, winning's not normal, and there's certain things you have to do. Being successful and winning are two entirely different things. So, you know, you look at, I can tell two athletes will make the same mistake. One I'll cuddle and say, don't worry about it, it's okay, I'll see you tomorrow. And the other one I'll chew out. That is very difficult within a group situation for those athletes. They've got to have total trust in you to understand you're doing the best for them, because they say, well, you know, she did that and you didn't get up her, yet you drove me into the ground.
Yeah.
And it comes down to the different personalities. And I think one of the things that's quite funny with, I always used to have a lot of success with the men early on in my career, which people don't realize. And I don't have the same empathy now. And the reason why is I've just, a couple of my old women athletes said, you used to be so, shall we say, army sergeant with the men back in 1992 through to 97. You know, this is what you do. Here's your orders.
Right.
And you're not like that anymore. Really, Loretta Harrop chews me out all the time. She said, you just pussyfoot around the men all the time. But the girls, you still, you know, you say, this is what we're going to do and this is how we're going to do it. Now, either you do it or you're out the door. And she said, but you give the men opportunities now to say, well, what do you think? And she said, that never used to happen before. Now, so that ties in very much to what you're saying, you know. And I find with the girls are not as soft as guys, if I can say that, with you know, their controversy. A female, when they come to be coached by you, once they respect you and think you know what you're doing, they don't question it. If they trust you, they say, let's do it. Where the guys are always looking for the next easy meter. Oh, if I, you know, I'll get the next bike chain. I'll get the next, you know, I'll get the fastest. It's one thing that I've found all the time, you know, like I remember when we were doing the bikes, I had one girl, you know, I had two or three, said, oh, I like that bike. And I said, well, what's not the top of the range? She said, but the colour's better. You know, they like the colour scheme. They weren't interested in, you know, what bells and whistles were
sure.
on it. And so, for me, it's great, because once you build the trust and you build the confidence and you take them down an innovative path, which is one of the reasons we're a little bit different than most, is, you know, Tudor Bomper for periodization was around when I was a swim coach in 1980. So, like, it's 40-year-old. So I don't adhere to those type of mechanisms where everybody else in coaching and triathlon does. So, of course, that puts me out of the mainstream, when really I should be the mainstream. But everybody's using 30-year-old technology to set everybody up, you know. So from that perspective, it's hard, because, see, when my athletes go away, they're forever having people tell them that, oh, you can't bid you on that. That's not the right way. And then when they're successful, we have the famous quote that happens through sport. Yes, but just one, or, you know, Danielle has just won the world half Ironman championships by 3.5 minutes. Yes, but if she did it this way, she would have won by 5 minutes. That's my rod to bear in life. So we do it well. While the people concentrate and while they're not listening to the outside bells and whistles that's going off around them, we seem to have great success. But I will say to you that I don't push the guys anywhere near as hard as I push the girls anymore. And that might be because I'm getting an old man and I'm not Sergeant Major anymore and I'm not out training. So I think, you know, I sit down and talk to them a little bit more. But I think it's because I know the girls are tougher, basically, you know, and they cope with the ups and downs. And people think they don't, but they do. And then on the race day, you know, they give everything. And that's why, you know, I'm proud of Carolyn Stephan. You know, I think she gets a bum rap. She's a fantastic athlete. People don't realize she's a wonderful competitor because she has little fragilities before the race. You know, everybody sets up different. As I said in a writing, I said, you know, nitrate glycerine is very, very fragile till you light it up. And that's how she is. So, you know, she comes across as, oh, I'm scared, I'm this, I'm that. Gets worse as it comes close to race day. And then, hey, you walk out on race day and pull a gun out and shoot it, and she is just the ultimate competitor.
No question.
You know, Daniela Riff just proved exactly the same. Everybody kept saying, she's finished, she's gone, she went back to uni, and she's gone. You don't understand it. And I just, maybe it's on a different drum, but I just looked at how she used to race, and she was so tough. And here was this big girl racing all these little waifs. You know, they were half her size, and she'd be battling and battling and battling, you know. And I used to watch that all the time, and I just think, you know, I sit back and watch, and if they don't approach me, I wait till they're basically not got a coach and not doing stuff and then starting to think about they don't have it, and then I approach them and say, you know what, I think you could do better. You know? And subsequently, we've got the scoreboard that says we do.
When you look at, you know, Siri Lindley was one of your athletes, and Greg Welch,
yep,
and Brett, so many different, Greg Bennett. When you look back at yep, training some of those legendary guys, like you said, you're a different
yep
coach now than you were then.
Yeah.
What was attractive about those guys? What was it about a Greg Welch that made him, you know, not just great in winning the Ironman? People forget that he won world championships at Olympic distance. That
yeah,
if every, he hadn't yeah, had his every, heart every issue, distance, he probably would have been at the starting line of the 2000 Olympics.
Yep. Duathlon championships too.
He won duathlon.
He won
yep
Olympic,
long
he
distance,
short,
ITU. Yeah, yeah, all of it.
Yep. Yeah. Well, Greg's a bit different to the most people that I actually resonate to because he was a very talented athlete.
Right.
Physically, he was fantastically talented, you know? And he had what I call the perfect Ironman body. He was a real strong little guy, but he was little, so he was light, you know. And so you don't get a guy that's built like a, you know, he was so strong and yet weighed 58 kilo or 59 kilo. So you have a VO2 max that you can't jump over because it's so high because of the weight variant.
Yeah.
And then he had the muscles. So, you know, and, you know, he was a very, very precocious athlete. Blokes like Greg Bennett, you know, like I couldn't train Greg like I did because I used to give him the same session every day if he didn't do it good. It was just hard. Greg wanted to be, Greg willed himself to be a champion.
Right.
He willed himself. Every day he'd turn up. And he'd just turn up every day and just work his ass off, if I can use that.
Yes, sure, sure, yep.
That was Greg, you know. And if I said you're doing 6,200s today, and I said you're doing it on Tuesday, and I said you're doing it on Wednesday, and then I'd sometimes give it to him again on Thursday. And he said, why are you doing that? I said, because you're not talented. You've got to be hard. And if you want to beat these guys, if you're going to wait, race a Welshie and you're going to race a Brad Bevan, you've got to be up there with, you've got to have something to fight him with, you know. And unfortunately, it's not natural ability. And that's the other thing people don't understand about that. That's, you know, he is such a mentally strong guy when he's on. He's so strong, you know. And so, you know, I really sit back and I look at now the others coming through because I'm at the end of my career and You know, to see Darren Smith dominate the coaching in the ITU makes me proud that I had something to do with that.
Siri Lindley.
Siri now take over my mantle as the best Ironman coach out there. You know, it's proud, you know. It vindicates my training methods. Ben Bryce, the national head coach of British Triathlon, they don't do a bad job. So, you know, they don't train like me, but I've had a hand in molding how they think about training. And so from that perspective, I'm very proud, you know.
So when I look at people who, over the years, I thought would transition to Ironman, and unfortunately she got sick and couldn't, I thought Emma Snosil had the perfect Ironman body and would have, as an Olympic gold medalist, and had that raw speed and the ability to swim with the front pack. Did you feel the same way?
Well, I'll tell you a story. One of the reasons why we had dramas is because her first professional race check for me was in a three-quarter distance race. Yeah. So that should answer your question.
Yeah.
I put her in, and I had to chase her out of the bushes because she ran away. You ask her about it one day. I took her to Ibiza and promised her she'd go in the short race, and I put her in the long one, which was a 3K swim, 120K bike, and a 30K run, and she'd never, ever been in anything other than a sprint race because she was under 23. And
right.
There's a story there for you later, how we put her back together again after the unfortunate death of Luke.
Yes.
And, so I took her down there, and she ran away from the start, at least at the end. When I put her, she found out she was in the long race. And I said to her, she just had to do the swim and do the bike, and then, you know, I'd pull her off the run. And, of course, she led all the way and got better and better and better as the day went on, and she led off the bike, so... Of course, she said, "Coach, when do I stop?" And of course, I said, "You're not stopping. You're leading by 4 minutes. Keep going." And so, that should answer your question. That was her first professional paycheck.
Wow.
I was training her when I trained her. We were always looking at that because she just—you're right. The physiology just is wonderful.
Yeah. No. I always felt that.
But anyway, she went on and won 4 world championships, an Olympic.
Gold
medal, was robbed of another 3 world championships with the ITU rubbish that they do. What is it? The series instead of having a world championship.
Oh, yeah, I know.
She was phenomenal. She's the best ever up until now, and that's why we keep goading Nicholas Spirig, you know. Are you going to be the best ever athlete I've trained, you know? And that's what keeps her going. I tell her that, you know, she's still not number one. She might be the best in the world, but she's still not number one in my squad. We motivate her that way, you know. So she's moved up. She's got on the podium now. I think she's moved up to second. And so I've said to her, the next step is, you know, you've got to show me, if you want to be known as the best all-around Brett Sutton athlete ever, you have to show me you can win an Ironman. And so today's, you know, next week's the start of that process. But I've never had anybody that's won short course, long course, you know, Ironman. Well, I trained him. Greg did it, but I didn't train him when he did that, and there's some of it. And so, you know, that's her motivation, I think. Well, you'd have to ask her, but that's what I think her motivation is.
Can she, obviously, you've got Daniela Reif, who now, you know, after finishing second in Kona, everybody knows that she certainly can win that race. Next year, you might have Nicola and Daniela at the starting line in Kona. How do you handle that?
I'll handle it very easy when the time comes. I don't think that'll happen next year because of her commitments. Her biggest problem with Nick at the present moment, the biggest problem is, you know, she's an icon in Switzerland and she just doesn't have any time to train. So that's why we haven't trained for the Ironman. We're basically trying to work out how we can get her enough time to actually train for the short course race. She's a mum now and she's a hands-on mum. She's married and she's got a career, you know, she works and then she tries to train. So she's got very, very limited time and I find that very difficult. So that's why we're fitting the Ironman in here, because it's a gap that she said, you know, well, I'd be usually having a rest now. So, you know, if I can come over and support the kids and do the Ironman and, you know, that'd be great. So, but in the future, I don't know which way she's going to go. We haven't had discussions. We do know that the European Championships is in Europe, and it will be in Geneva, which is Swiss. So she will have a goal of doing the European Championships next year in 2015. And that's basically all we've looked at the present moment. So where she goes, we don't know. I would like her just to do what she's doing now, and that's enjoy her life and enjoy her sport, because that's her go. With Daniela, she's on a break now. Everybody said, why is she not at Bahrain? People don't realise that February, March this year, Daniela wrote in the magazine and said, I'll never do an Ironman as long as I live.
Exactly.
So the transformation has been pretty amazing. And she's a great athlete. And I have no, but she also comes with her problems. And we're just going to make sure that we keep the pressure off her a little bit, because I think that's something that is hard to handle for her. And so rather than, keep her going and keep her pushing on, when she was, that was the end of her preparation. She had a wonderful 3 months off the back of, very little long work. So, of course, I sit here thinking, if I can, same as Chrissy, if I can fix the head, she's a dynamite athlete. She's dynamite. And I think anybody that's rode against her in a couple of those other races will realise she is. And so... For me, Daniela's having a rest, and then we'll start to build up and we'll look to Kona. But, you might be surprised, Bob, you might interview her over there at Des Moines. We'll keep it going short, and keep the non-drafting races in and keep it fun. The Swiss, the Swiss tend to be more like that. They're not, she's an individual, she's not somebody, I want to be a teamie, they're not like that. And I just think that, she keeps herself a little bit away, which was one of Chrissy's biggest strengths, by the way, when we started. She knew nothing about...
anything.
She knew nothing about Ironman right. And who was in it. And I think that helped, And Danielle was exactly the same. She didn't even know who Sebastian Kelmy was.
She didn't know who Dave Scott was. She actually asked me for a copy of my 25 years of Ironman book so she can do a little research and know these people next time. When Dave Scott came up to her at the airport after the race and was congratulating her on a race, and she was like... had no idea who he was and just said, so how was your race?
Yeah.
Like, who? Yeah, so, exactly. I'm a six-time winner.
And,
okay.
And that's a big advantage.
It is
maybe
advantage.
I'll get her to send the book back.
Exactly. You should, you'll be intimidated. So
They tend to listen to people, and then all of a sudden they doubt what you're telling them to do, and then it makes it very difficult. And,
right.
That to me is it's the hard thing with us, because what we're trying to do with the TriSoto.com now is I think I've got a lot of knowledge that I can help age groupers with. I see people walking in races.
Right.
Well, I go to these races and I see 20-30% of them walking, And I just know that I have the skill and the information to stop that happening. But everybody's intimidated because maybe I've got the reputation with the best athletes. He wouldn't talk to me. So to be quite honest with you, that's what we're trying to do now. We're not changing direction. I just feel that, I see so many people putting their time and effort into it, and so I'm saying, I could give them a help. And so that's what we're trying to portray a little bit more. And the problem is, the more success I have with the top guys, the more people say, what he does wouldn't pertain to me. And that's what we want to, for me, in my closing out years, I enjoy watching these people, make their goals. And it's wonderful. And I try to get my athletes to buy into that, And people think he's knocking WTC. I'm not knocking WTC. If you can't take some constructive criticism, then you're a very small organization, The fact is that, Nick was running around to do the Ironman. Why would I do that? Why would I give them all the free publicity, Why would we do 70.3 Rapperville with her picture all over the front page and nobody pay her any management rights or, image rights? No, we're not like that, But what I will say, if there's something not being done well and can be done better, well, I'm going to say it. And the day I stop saying it's the day I should retire, because then I'm no longer relevant. But I think if the guy that's mostly had the most success in the sport can't talk on sport and performance issues, I think it's a sad day for our sport. So do I have dramas with WTC? No, I don't have any dramas. I don't even have any dramas with the CEO. We get on very well. However, he, like me, is the first one that's willing to sit and talk about things, and we get up, shake hands, and agree to disagree. I think that's a very healthy thing, and I think he's been a very good addition to WTC. Now, all I have to do is change his mind on which way to take it forward.
Interesting.
So, you know, I'm working on that the best I can.
Right, but at least there's a dialogue. Dialogue
the bottom
is
line
good.
Is, yeah. Yeah. The bottom line is we want to, I'd like, what would make me happy in the next 3 or 4 years is if I can get to the grassroots people and say, you know what, I can help you not do that walk. I can help you say, well, they go home and say, I finished an Ironman, but you know what they say, but I walked it. I would love to be able to get to those people, you know, and say, guys, you know, let's do the whole thing just like the pros. Let's run the whole thing, you know. And so that to me is, you know, every bit the biggest goal for me now is having a top squad. You know, for me it's about letting the younger next generation come through, the Series and the Darrens and the Brent Bens, you know.
Right.
You know, I was just lucky enough that I lived in Switzerland and Daniela is Swiss and I could help her. I'm going to be mostly helping another pro very soon who actually lives in France or Switzerland, next to Switzerland. So it's more for me a circumstantial thing now. I'm not interested in saying, well, Brett Sutton's going to have the best team and all that stuff. You know, we did that with Team TVB. So for me now it's more, you know, what I enjoy. You know, I enjoy handing out sponges at races. I enjoy trying to tell people, eat that chocolate. You know, it's not going to bite you. You know, it's going to help you run the next 10K. So that's where we're up to at the present moment.
You know, one of the things I read from Chrissy was after her 2011 race when she had crashed and basically everything had gone wrong. She was pretty compromised going into that race. And that was that turned out to be her last race. She wins that race.
Yep.
And one of the things she said that you called her and you hadn't talked in a while. And she used to doubt if she could race under duress. And I think you probably wondered it too.
Yep.
And you wondered if she would crumble. She wondered if she would crumble, and she didn't crumble. She won probably, I bet you that's her most satisfying win, winning in 2011 when...
She was magnificent.
She was magnificent. She it was probably one of the classic races of all time. But you called her and said, you know what, you've really got nothing left to prove. And this is a girl who's in 4 years had won 13 Ironman events, Ironman distance events, had been gone undefeated and had the whole world laid out in front of her, right, in terms of more sponsorship, et cetera. What did you know about her that led you to say, you know what, it's time to hang it up?
Well, there's two answers to that.
Yeah.
One could be controversial and one couldn't be. So, you know, I don't want to be controversial. I'm sick of that. The fact is, Chrissy didn't come into it as a triathlete. So triathlon was a vehicle for her talent.
Right.
She found something that showed how great she is. It's like Carolyn Steffen. She was a swimmer beforehand, then she was a pro bike rider.
Yes.
And each suit didn't fit, if you understand. You know, I was good at it. I was very good at it, but it's just, you know, and... I use Carolyn because it gives a good reflection on Chrissy. Carolyn found triathlon, and then she was capable. She could run better than people think, and I could see that, again, just from observation. I watched her in 4 or 5 races. I reached out to Carolyn when I seen her walk the last 10K of the Swiss Ironman with my girl streaming past her up. She led it by 9 minutes. So she was 9 minutes in front, and can you imagine how you would feel when you're walking and you're getting sixth and then seventh? And she walking straight towards me after I'd spent all my time strategizing my girls, how to catch her, how to beat her, and the magnificence of the personality. She was clear of eye. Her body wouldn't work, but her brain was saying, I'm getting to the finish line. And, you know, 90% of the others will pull out.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, this wasn't my day today. Here was this magnificent specimen of courage walking, and the eye was just like someone I was looking at when I used to be a fighter, you know. They hadn't lost. They weren't broken. You know, the spirit was there. I can't do it. I'm not. So I've reset my goals, and now I'm going to finish. And that's why Carolyn Steffen at Kona keeps getting fifth on a bad day, because she keeps giving, you know, and that's why I sort of tried to stand up for her when some people who should know better is knocking her. Because, you know, she is a magnificent competitor to me. As someone once said to me, but how do you judge them? I said, well, you know what, I look at people and say, if I've got to take that hill, which one in my squad would I give a gun to? Now, someone wouldn't give a gun to because they'll shoot me as I go up over the hill. Because, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Others will turn and run away, you know. And it was like with Bella Bayless, you know. And I remember one of the guys once said to me, he said, well, which one of us? I said, I take Bella. And they looked at me like, why would you take? Because I know what I'm getting. Yeah. I'm just getting a whole body full of courage and takes orders and so is not going to make stupid mistakes under pressure. Thus, 16 Ironman wins with a very average body.
Right.
Because she just used to do 100% what was right for her. Now, Carolyn, under pressure, exactly the same. You know, I'd throw her a gun any day and say, come on, kid, let the boys sit back and cook the lunch. We're going to take this. Well, Chrissy had that ability once you paired her back. She was like an onion. She was all, oh, my God, and insecurities. But as you peeled her back, there was this underlying courage that I had nothing but respect for. And so she always doubted herself that she was the real deal. You know, how do I handle, you know, it's nice for me riding 15 minutes faster than everybody else. And because she was so introspective of herself, and such a perfectionist, she was always worried about that. That, you know, well, when things don't go for me, I can't perform. Now, that might have happened because in her earlier life, she used to be like that. But in the end, I just wanted her to know, not to retire, but I wanted to be honest, because I always say to my people, I'll tell you when you had your best ever race. And that's the thing. When I think that's as best you can do, I'll let you know. And, you know, I think her best ever race was the second Ironman win with me, and people say, oh, yeah, it's because of this and that. But to actually miss 18 minutes of the bike and sit there with the problems that you have, the mental problems, can you imagine everybody's riding away, you can't pump up your tyre, nobody's coming, and then to get off the bike first. That was just the... nobody ever puts it in context. That was the tour de force of sport. Forget about triathlon. That was the sports magic moment, any sports magic moment. You were watching the supreme being just do fantastic things that shouldn't be done. And, of course, so I'd already, Chrissy, you are the full quid. You are the real champion. You know, but she never bought into it. And the only time I think she bought into it was when she outran Rennie in a run race. And then all I wanted to do was point it out because everything, you know, they were all saying this and that. And that's all, you know, the noise that bubbles around that corner. Yeah. I know that she knew the only person that would tell her the truth was sitting in Switzerland. And I just wanted to tell her that I thought that was the race that she proved to herself she's the ultimate champion. And so those things are important to me, you know, and I think that's why we succeed. You know, those things are more important than what the bike split is. And blah, 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 blah. You know, I think one of the things Danielle killed herself was all she was worried about was doing a faster bike split. I want to do the bike record. I don't want to do the bike record. I'm saying forget the bike record. The bike record means nothing because the person never won anything.
Right.
I said you've got to do the race, you know, and that's why she'll be stronger next year on the bike, because she won't be running around worrying about, do I do the bike race? Do I do the bike race? She'll concentrate on what we need to do. So next time we won't run past two aid stations because I'm feeling good and it doesn't matter. You know, they're the little rookie mistakes. But that's why I know, did you see what happened when she's totally gone? She's fit to run 30K, Bob, and I'll tell you that's true.
Yeah.
She wasn't fit to run 42 because I didn't have the time to get her fit to run 42. I had to make a decision. Do I throw away Mount Tremblant and a tryout to win a world championship to hope that she does a great Ironman, not knowing if she'll ever handle the heat because she's out of Switzerland? So there's all little things. So for me, it was about the bird in the hand, not the two in the bush. So we went for Mount Tremblant. And, you know, in doing that, I mostly compromised her position at Kona. However, in saying that, had she went to Mount Tremblant, tired, trained up, not tapered, okay, and ran sixth, she wouldn't have even wanted to go to Kona because you think, I've got no hope.
Right, she would have set them out, yeah.
They're the subtleties, and they're the subtleties that are Chrissy Wellington that people don't see. They're the subtleties of Chrissy. You know, she is a very complicated human being, as most great ones are. And so when you peeled her back from all the insecurities, it was just the core was just sheer courage. But she never seen that in herself. She never seen it in herself. You know, these people don't see it in themselves because they're perfectionists. Okay? Carolyn Stephan doesn't see it in herself. Danny Ellis said, well, that's just normal. Isn't everybody like that? No. Did you see what she did when Rennie ran past her, when she could hardly stand up?
She went with her.
She kicked.
Tried, yeah.
She went with her. Yeah. How many people have you seen her go past that actually go with her for the next 800 when they're totally, when they're fresh?
Never.
They go, oh, there she goes, bye-bye.
Exactly.
I'll stick to my plan.
Right.
That 30 seconds encapsulates why I think if Daniela stays away from the triathlon crowd and keeps listening, why she will win one. Because her natural instinct was to fight. You know, there's nothing to fight with, but I'm going to fight her. I'm going to go with her. And she most likely give herself second, because once she did that, she rebooted herself, you know what I mean? And she was able to hang off and hold off a great athlete in, you know, Rachel Joyce. But had she not, I'd say Rachel Joyce would have got her as well, because she was in the depths of the doldrums and Rennie coming past lit her fire. You know what? I'm dead, but I'm not going down without a fight. Now, they're the things I look for in people. And, you know, not how fast I do this and how fast I do that. And, you know, I think that describes Chrissy. Chrissy has always been in a hurry. She wasn't a triathlete. She wanted something to define herself in her life. She found it. She wanted something that she could help do what she used to do with it. And now, as a sports person of great repute, she's now helping so many foundations. She's helping so much social projects. And she was able to use triathlon as a springboard to do the things she wanted to do in life.
Right.
Whereas a lot of other people want to do triathlon. That's their life. Chrissy was never like that. You know, Chrissy didn't do well in 2007, Bob. You'd never know her, because she was on her way back home. She was on her way back to her desk job because she found it very, very difficult not getting the paycheck of a Friday afternoon.
Right.
You know, that consistency of life. So unless she did an amazing job in 2007, nobody even knew she existed. And so that's why we threw all our resources behind her and worked her and maybe overtrained her, yes. Overpressured her, guilty. Totally. But if she would tell you that it was a one-shot deal. I'll give you one preparation, see what you can do, make me a great athlete. And so we did. But, yeah, so that to me, I think Chrissy then liberated herself. When she did that great run and come from way back and held off the best runner,
yeah.
I think she thought, well, I did it all. He's right. I am a champion. And
well,
then... Yeah. Like most honorable champions, what's the next challenge?
Well, that she said that right early on. She talked about that she wanted the podium, right? She wanted a place to speak from. And as an Ironman champion,
yes.
That gave her a presence. It gave her that credibility to help other people and help women in sport and other things she wanted to do. So, and what I loved about Caroline from interviewing her is, you know, she had gone through swimming and she'd gone through cycling, and she didn't like the part of cycling where she would pull for the other gals and they would get the glory.
Oh, exactly.
You know,
well,
so
that's a funny story. If you viewers want to hear that story,
yeah,
I can tell you that one. Because, see, I got all sorts of negative connotations when I started hunting around and look for it. And, again, I do the background work. So, you know, I'm like a little, you know, agent. I don't think, oh, that athlete. I go find out off people. So, of course, I found, asked people, oh, she's terrible. I said, oh, boy, don't get on the wrong side of Carolyn. She poor. Well, and I thought, okay. Well, that type of stuff doesn't put me off, because I'll straight away say, oh, we've got a spirited one here.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just... So I remember going up to the Cervelo Life Force bike team, I think it was called, and I spoke to the manager. He said, oh, you don't want her in your team. She's very disruptive. And okay, you know, and the bloke bang, 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 the way I'm in. Okay. So then I actually took a bike around to get a group set put on it. And I was talking in the bowels of the team, you know, the workers.
Yes, the domestic,
so I said, you know, Carolyn. He said, yeah, I know Carolyn all the time. He said, we go out and have coffee all the time. I said, I do it. Why? She said, she's the one goddamn person here that speaks her mind, tells it how it is. And, you know, she's the water carrier here, and she hates every minute of it. I said, what's she like? She said, she's the most honest person. He said, I don't go out and have coffee with anybody else in the team. I go out with Carolyn, because she said, you know what? She's just the nicest person. I said, well, that's not what I hear. He said, oh, yeah, but you must always hear enough people that she tells the truth to. She said, she, you know, she thinks she can win the stage today. She doesn't want to carry water bottles for people she can't. So, of course, she fires up and tells the management what she thinks. And so everybody gets a bit offside. But he said, you know, I can tell you this, Brett, and I get on great with her. And I said, everybody that gets to know her loves it. And so that was it. That was the recruitment. It wasn't her. The guy sold me. And then it's me seeing how she raced. That's what we did. So, you know, they're very simple like that. You know, men get intimidated by strong women. And Chrissy, you know, one of the strongest. Carolyn's one of the strongest. Jesus, have an argument with Nicola Spirig and see how you go. You know, unless you've got your facts all lined up, you're walking into a sausage machine. Now, exactly the same with Daniela. Daniela's not frightened. They look, well, she doesn't look me in the eye. She looks down on me and says, I think you're wrong. Well, it used to remind me all the time of Bella Bayless, because when Bella was upset, Bella would come out of that pool, run around and say, you know what? You need to take that back. I mean, what do you mean? She said, you need to take that back. I don't deserve that. And then I think about it for 2 seconds, and I say, I'm sorry, Bella. I didn't. I should have. And away she'd go back to the pool, and we'd get on great. No regrets, no animosity. And so, you know, I tend to handle these women maybe a little bit better than others because I'm not intimidated by people that are strong and have got their own courage. And I find that wonderful. So, that was Chrissy, you know. She was a complicated person. Now, Daniela's very complicated in other ways, but she's complicated. And so she needs to have somebody there that, you know, on some days will pat her on the head and some days will boot her in the bum. And I'm afraid, that doesn't happen enough now with athletes. They all got their entourages and they've all got their people telling them, you know, how good they are. And they make, you know, and that's the new generation. That's why I'm a dinosaur, you know. So for me, I don't do that. We don't have 10 people involved in the training program. We're old school. And so, you know, I understand I don't fit into the, you know, I'm going through a couple of federations with athletes at the present moment. I no longer fit into what they believe is necessary. Now, you can either fight it or you can accept it. And, you know, at the present moment, I've accepted it and thought, okay, now what I want to do is I want to work more with age groupers. You know, to tell you the truth, Bob, I started out with age groupers. That's
right.
How I started.
I know.
So I've always been, people say to me, and I say, oh, I'm an age group coach. I just have very fast ones. Now, I roll Nicola Spirig up all the time. I say, she's the fastest age group I've ever trained. But she's an age grouper.
Right.
So she hasn't given her life over to triathlon, and some people think that's bad. Okay, I won the Olympics. Now I'm going to have
a life.
Get married. I'm going to have a baby.
Yeah.
Because I want a baby. What are you going to race? I don't know. This is what I want to do in my life. Now, Chrissy's done the same thing. So they tend to get blamed because, oh, we didn't do the World Cup Series this year. You know, they tend to get blamed because they are using the sport as I think it could be, part of their whole existence. And, you know, that's what I find about age groupers. You know, they've got to do their family, they work, they do their training. You know, I find that absolutely amazing. I think, you know, I say to my group on the deck, I said, the age groupers do it so much harder than you, you should be respecting them. And you can ask anybody in my group. Anybody that doesn't respect an age grouper, who's one and nine then, mate, they don't stay in my group very long, no matter how fast they are, because they show a lack of character. And if you show a lack of character with me, you're out the door. So that's why there's people around not so happy with me, but that's the way it is. I think these people do a wonderful job. And, you know, what I'm trying to do is make the races better for them, and that's where the criticism comes from WTC. I want to see it done better. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I want to see these people get a great experience. But these guys out there, you know, the age groupers, you know, I think they should always be part of our sport. You know, I've been tried to be recruited on a couple of occasions to do a pro-only thing with a couple of things that started and stopped over the last 20 years, and I've always rejected it. I didn't sort of like the age group shut out at 10 to the D, and that's where we're trying to head the next level. I want to bring people in because I think that's what's the uniqueness of our sport, Bob. Now, I know you started it a long, long time before I even got into it. That was the part about it that made us all look at the sport. You know, I had six Australian swim champions when I got the sack from swimming because I brought age group triathlon to the pool. But these guys, I used to love watching it, you know, back in those days. It was always a race and a camaraderie, and everybody had a drink. Everybody tells tall stories. Everybody was eating sausages. There was no how bars and all of, you know, I don't upset the sponsors, I won't say that. But you know what I mean? We'd have beer, and people just loved it. And I don't think the new people get that feeling anymore. I think they don't even know it exists, you know. And then, so, you know, I've got to keep the, you know, keep the bees honest, and I'm happy to do that. But I'd really like, in my last couple of years, to, you know, not be seen as this person that's just for the pros, just for the pros, just for the pros, you know. I think that the place that I'd like to be helping at the present moment is I see so many age groupers who are going down the wrong path with their training because of any number of reasons. And, you know, with a little tweak here and a tweak there, their experience will, they'll get so much more out of it. I think people like to finish the race running. I don't think they like to walk. And so anyway, that's my new hobby horse. And, you know, we're trying our best to make ourselves more accessible to those type of guys. So the pro team's smaller. I have absolutely no thoughts of trying to do another new team, TBB stuff, and start a new team and stuff like that. I'm past that now. I give that 6 years of my best, and it was wonderful, and it went terrific, and I'm really proud that now we're seeing, you know, the fruition of a lot more teams starting this year. And last year, all of a sudden, that model has been looked at, and, you know, it's taken to the next level, so that was great. But it all still comes back to just pro, and, you know, me, the whole idea is who's the fastest. It's not you're a pro and you're an age group. You know, I think that's the beauty of our sport that's being lost. That the uniqueness is that Bob Babbitt can get himself three-quarter fit. And
I doubt if that'll ever happen.
Well, you know, well, half fit.
Half fit is good, yeah.
On the start line with a Carol and Stefan and say, you know, go, you good thing. I'll see you at the banquet 15 hours later.
Right.
You know, that to me is what's special about the sport. It's the reason I got into the sport. I think I let success and the pros, you know, sort of overlap that part of the sport where I was concentrating so much on making other people better that I just thought, well, now I want to take a step back and see if I can help a few people do that. You know?
Love it. Hey, Brett, thank you so much for taking time. So people can find out trysutto.com, and any age grouper can train with you. I love it.
The slower the better, because we like to take people. Like, people don't realize, they said to me twice, and this is what I'm saying about, you know, Chrissy's a great athlete or whatever. I think the two best coaching performances I had was Hilary Disco to take her to an Ironman victory. I think what she did was absolutely fantastic. You know, she's a 12-hour Ironman, and here she is podiuming all over the world, and she's still going now doing her thing. I thought she turned herself like Greg Bennett into a great athlete, you know, and did it with what she had, but did it, you know, with the 7 inches between her ears.
Exactly.
And then we had the Wonks that went from 14 hours to break 10 hours. I thought that was a miracle coach. I walk around thinking every day, how did I do that? both those people had a very high position in our squad because they had such respect because the faster ones could see how much harder they worked than the faster ones.
Exactly.
Because I pushed them hard. So for me, you know, I like watching those age groupers knock 2 hours off their time. So I don't care how slow they are. If they want to contact us, we'll help them take that
Love
time
it.
Off.
Love it. Hey, Brett, thanks again. Again, this is Babbittville Radio. Our guest has been Brett Sutton. We're brought to you by California 1020, 10 miles, 20 bands, February 15th. Del Mar Fairgrounds, Encinitas, and back, cal1020.com. Core Sports, the very best in women's athletic wear. That's coresports.com. And check out any of our interviews on iTunes on Babbittville Radio. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.